Hello and welcome to the TOVG podcast. I am the dreamy George Weedman, and I'm so happy that I'm living in the sunlight and loving in the moonlight. I'm having a wonderful time all the time, and so should you. With me in here is the level-headed Jimmy Sundaray.
That was I just have to say, that was a wonderful reference. I hope that anybody gets that reference to that song.
Yeah.
Also, hello, everybody. I'm Jimmy.
The creepy-ass Tiny Tim ukulele jam.
Song.
Yeah.
I thought it was
appropriated for SpongeBob. It could have been. And yeah, you just heard her. We also have Kite Tails, who's always looking on the bright side of life.
Uh-huh. Yes, it is definitely a Mr. Blue Sky kind of day.
Oh my gosh.
And we have Jordan underneath, who came out today to expose himself to actual sunlight for the first time in over 6 years.
I did not.
Congratulations. That is a lie.
You're a dirty liar, George.
Well, that's what we're all about at the TOVG podcast, is lying in order to placate our sensibilities about being happy about life. So,
dark.
What have you guys been doing this week and playing this week?
Anybody want to go first?
I've been playing some Mario Kart 8.
Oh, yeah.
I'm jealous of you guys.
It's at the office. I haven't touched it, though. Every time I'm here, I've been working, because, you know, it's what I do.
Yeah, that's the reason.
It's an important thing to do.
Yeah, I haven't picked up Mario Kart 8 myself. I'm not sure if I'm actually going to get it.
Is Baby Rosalina your favorite character?
No. She's not.
Just no.
I unlocked Ludwig first, and I just love him so much. I don't even know why.
I think Ludwig might be the most interesting of the
Ludwig
Koopalings.
Is my jam. I mean, his hair is amazing as well.
It's great. He's a good reference.
It is. I also got Wii Party U as a free download with Mario Kart 8, and that is amazing. I love it.
Is it good?
It is so good. They've got so many little mini games that it's just, and they're so creative. The way that they use the Wii Pad is so innovative. That's really, really good. I was thinking about doing a video about it because I was really floored about how many cool things they integrated.
I think you should do a video about that because I would like to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a perfect party console.
I'll just try not to be super jelly that I never got a Wii U, and I've always wanted one. Yeah, it's just a matter. No, it's just a matter of like saving up money and stuff, which is difficult to do nowadays. Since I kind of want to top load all of my student loan payments before they gather up over time. So I'm being kind of thrifty these days.
Yeah, no, actually like something that's ruined my Wii U experience. Is I have a Wii U, but I have no games because I just sold all of them.
Oh god!
Because like I played them enough to a point where I'm like, I'll just buy these when they're like dirt cheap someday.
Yeah. Like I freaking love Platinum, and it kills me that all of their big games over the past 2 years are now going to be coming out on Wii U.
Wonderful
101 and Bayonetta, because god, I'm gonna be such a jealous asshole when Bayonetta 2 comes out.
No, Wonderful 101 is the only one I've missed out on. I haven't gotten to try that yet.
I've only ever seen one preview of that game, and there's a motorcycle behind me. Excuse me for that. Welcome again to Redondo Beach. But yeah, I've only ever seen one trailer for Wonderful 101, but it looked pretty interesting.
Have you played Platinum games before?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Oh, they are super rad. They are so super rad. They're like just fun, childish, purely like, they make a better case for games as art than like pretentious 2D indie side scrollers, because they're like a love letter to how schlocky video games can be. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a bold statement, but
hey man, what you got against indie 2D side scrollers, 8-bit low res, bro?
That I don't know. Like, I guess making a dumb game for dumbness's sake is kind of has its downfalls as well, but it also has a whole lot of charm that Platinum does extremely well.
Interesting. I might have to check something out. But I've heard a lot of good things about Bayonetta, but I've never been inspired to play it.
You know what is also a love letter to the oftentimes odd difficulty of old games is 1001 Spikes.
I can finally talk about this. I'm so
yes, you can.
So excited.
Be
it's been a great
Jimmy.
Week for me. It's been
you
a great
sound
week for
so
me.
So happy.
I'm like legitimately in love with this game.
Nice.
I got into contact with the Nicholas guys through Alex a couple of weeks back, and they were just like super nice. I mean, Tyrone specifically, I haven't met anybody else, but he just like sent me a copy of the game, and I got to play it like 4 weeks before it came out, and I was just like in love. And now that it's fully out, I get to like spread my joy to the rest of the world, and it's just so good. It's such a good platformer. It's amazing.
It okay, looked so really, really cool when you were streaming. I wanted to try it.
You have two different jump buttons, right?
Right, yes.
And that's super weird. Like, that's not normal.
It's not something that usually happens. And I know Polygon did, like, a little, like, a few days before release, they, like, were allowed to put up, like, a Let's Play kind of video with two of their guys. And they never really explained it. And a lot of the comments are like, why is there two jump buttons? Wouldn't it make sense to have just one? And I could see why people would think that. Because, like, in games like Meat Boy and whatnot, your jump height is however long you hold the button, right? But there's a specific art to jumping in 1001 Spikes, because everything is made like, it's like a big like grid. Everything is up, like in blocks. So you jump, like your low jump jumps exactly one block up and your high jump jumps two. And so like some parts there's like spikes above you, but so like you can't high jump, but there's like darts shooting at you, so you have to jump over them. So you have to like low jump under the spikes and over the darts, and it's like knowing when to use which one is like a very important part of being able to progress in
well,
like the later levels.
I don't
levels.
Think it's bizarre to have two different types of jumps, because I mean you have that in Super Mario World, you've got the spin jump and the regular, but
yeah,
to
true.
Have different height jumps, that's I don't know, that would be awkward.
Yeah, there's like a low jump button and a regular jump, and
yeah.
Well, like, I mean, it's hard to explain without showing specific examples from the game, but there's a lot of parts where, like, if you jump just your regular jump to get on a platform, then, like, a dart shooter will shoot you. So you have to do the high jump to get over the dart shooter and activate it, so it shoots under you, and then you land in front of it, and you can jump from there, and you, like, didn't get killed. And figure out how to use it pretty naturally in like the first two worlds.
Does
so.
It kind of mitigate the difficulty of a like really super demanding precision platformer to have a jump button that is always set to jump a fixed distance no matter how you press it?
Well, it's not a fixed distance, just I mean like distance upward, yes. Yeah, like it's all right, yeah, I see what you're saying. It's like in Super Meat Boy sometimes they have those parts where there's like two saws on either side of like an opening and you have to like jump through them, you have to like thread the needle and get through with this like perfect jump height. 1001 Spikes kind of like eliminates that kind of challenge by giving you a different one, like so you always know you're going to jump exactly one space, but a lot of lateral distance is like you still have like a perfect gauge of how far you can go laterally too, but you have to like really know what you're doing, and like I said, you learn it pretty easily. Everything just kind of you learn naturally, which
so,
is kind of cool.
Yeah, and since you said that like it's a fixed height, I guess that also means that the levels would be designed more laterally than longitudinally, and now that you mention it, like that kind of makes sense. Like I've always seen levels in this game doing a lot of scrolling horizontally rather than vertically.
Yeah. They're actually to counter that, there is a multiplayer mode in the game, in specifically 1001, not the original, called Tower of Nanar, and all the levels are vertically oriented, but they're not set up in such like a hyper difficult way that the main game is. So like they're meant to be like four people on screen jumping around on a bunch of kind of easy to access platforms, but with like a lot of like dumb things that you can mess up on. Like I saw that spike there, I didn't need to go like run into it, but I did because it's I'm having a great time.
So that's like the extra party mode, and the real super hardcore difficulty is a horizontally challenging game.
yeah, it's very interesting. I recommend everybody go play it. It's on so many things already. It's on Wii U and 3DS and Steam and PS4, and I think it's coming to Xbox One very soon.
All right, well, rad. I kind of sort of really want to check it out now, because I also I have a lot of day job stuff going on, too. I need to do an easier video next week, and I think a Let's Play of 1001 Spikes would be rad.
I would be down to watch you rage.
I have a surprising amount of patience, my friend.
This game has a surprising amount of of anti-patience built in.
I like horizontal challenge much more than three-dimensional challenge.
So I think Hogwash, I say. I have patience for anything. Anyways, so yeah, we top-loaded this week's podcast with discussion rather than beginning with the news to get us all buttered up and happy about the things we love in life, like 1001 Spikes and Mario Kart 8. Yeah. Because this week's theme is good news. Good news, everybody. The first half of our news topics will be devoted only to positive stories, good things happening in the world, because maybe there's too much pessimism going around. That's what a forum poster named Magic Inc., or Magic Incorporated, I guess, is what he writes on their tax forms, suggested, and I kind of agree, even though you're going to be more correct more often if you're a pessimist, but being an optimist is, like, healthy and fun and enjoyable and good for your relationships, right?
It's just nice to feel nice every now and then.
Happy is the new vitamin D.
Is happy the new cynicism? Is this going to be like our super popular twist?
Oh my gosh. Sure. I'm down.
Might possibly.
The first happy news story of this week is that Wii U sales increased 666% in the UK, that is, because of Mario Kart 8.
What a happy topic to start off on.
Yeah, what a joyous coincidence that they increased 666%. That's very healthy for the Wii U economy to...
Well, did you hear what they're doing to celebrate that?
What are they doing?
Yeah, Nintendo, having finally reached that coveted 666, they're going to release Satan as an unlockable Mii driver.
What about baby Satan?
Sure, up the monotony and all those Koopalings.
Satan's not a real Mario character until they make a baby Satan. God.
Baby Satan.
Baby Satan. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, baby Satan.
Little
yes.
Lucifer.
So, on...
Feels a baby.
On May 30th, Mario Kart 8's UK release boosted the sales of the platform 666%. Mm-hmm. 82% of those sales were from consoles bundled with the game, hence the drastic rise in the console rather than the game sales, and it still rode in second place behind Watch Dogs. And I guess, like, okay, 666%, that's so weird. Like, that's a super awesome coincidence. Yeah. But it also, is that enough to save the Wii U? Like... Are system-selling apps are still a thing these days?
Well, okay, here's what I'm seeing. If you're looking forward, because we have E3 next week, which is obviously there's going to be things revealed at E3. We already know that there's a GameCube controller adapter for the Wii U that's coming out with Smash Brothers to, like, allow competitive Smash players to play on their favorite competitive controller on the
Nintendo.
And they're
trying their darndest to be legit about competitive Smash now.
Right, they're, like, really listening to what people want, and people want the real GameCube controller. They don't want the Wii Pro controller, and so Nintendo's listening. Now, think about this. They released that GameCube controller adapter. Their console sales just went up massively, so a lot of people own a Wii U. But they might not want to be playing Wii U games. They might have just bought it for Mario Kart 8, literally just for Mario Kart 8. Well, imagine next week at E3 that they announce like a dozen GameCube virtual console games coming to the Wii U. Like maybe, I don't know, F-Zero GX, maybe Mario Sunshine, you know, kind of like Kirby Air Ride, stuff that like people really liked on the GameCube, but you know. It's
that
stuck
would be
on the
cool.
GameCube, and
I
they have the GameCube controller
though.
Adapter. Like, yeah. That's more money that they can get without producing physical copies of games off of the people who just bought their Wii U and probably are still looking to like expand on their library, who may not want the Wii U games that are a bit older, you know?
I hate the idea of them having to rely on old product, though. Like, I still have my copy of F-Zero GX, and I still have a GameCube hooked up to a little old crappy SD TV. Why would I want
to
play it?
Not to mention relying on one of their biggest failures, too. Like, because, I mean, the GameCube was one of the least successful, so I don't think it'd be able to save the
But
Wii
the games
U.
for it were super rad!
No, yeah, they were. I love the GameCube, but I'm just saying.
That's the thing, though, is that I agree with George in the sense that it's kind of... a little unsettling to see that most of Nintendo's like big announcements and big sales are remakes, re-releases, HD, etc., etc., etc. But at the same time, I liked those games a lot when I was a kid. Like, I love Kirby Air Ride. if they released an HD version on the Wii U, I would be so happy for all the kids, all the like 10 to 12 year olds who have a Wii U, who have never, who weren't even old enough to experience that game when it came out, being able to experience it now. Because like, a lot of those games still hold up. They don't need like sequels or anything. Just re-releasing them to people who have never played them is like bringing a good thing to people who can't get them, because like, GameStop doesn't them sell GameCube games anymore.
Yeah, and I guess
especially
like
Kirby Air Ride.
The way my own personal policy for buying Nintendo consoles works is I, since GameCube and onwards, I've always waited for a mainline Zelda sequel. Like, that's the system seller for me. Like, I was a huge super duper Zelda fan as a kid. I bought GameCube for
Twilight Princess?
No, Wind Waker. And then Twilight Princess later on. And actually, the reason that Twilight Princess had a really good GameCube version is the reason why I don't think I ever got a Wii, is because it was years and years, way late into the console generation, that they made a dedicated mainline Zelda sequel for the Wii, which was Skyward Sword. By that time, it might have been too long. The reviews weren't good enough. It wasn't enough for me to actually fork over for what is like probably nowadays a $90 or $100 console, even though I really want to play Xenoblade. But, yeah, if they announce a legit mainline Zelda sequel that looks like it's going to be good, that isn't Hyrule Warriors at E3, I would be super hyped about the Wii U.
Well, I don't know if you saw that very likely fake but still circulating around list of the Nintendo announcements.
I don't think I have. E3.
Here, let me see if I can pull it up.
Oh my gosh, that reminds me. I took /V off my bookmarks toolbar, and now I'm really not up to date on my fake game rumors.
Here,
what do you got?
I'm linking it right now. That is a showroom instruction packet, apparently, for Nintendo. Looks pretty official, but it also looks like it could have been faked. But as you see on the games list that they have of things that they're going to be talking about, you see a title called Legend of Zelda Unbound King for Nintendo Wii U.
Unbound King?
Yeah, which
looks to be a badass subtitle.
Right.
You see, what else? Wii U HD Collection, Super Mario Sunshine HD, and Wave Race Blue Storm HD.
That sounds lame enough to be real.
Yarn Yoshi. Another Professor Layton, or Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright on 3DS. Dragon Quest VII on 3DS. Like, there's some things that look like kind of big things, and there's that Wii U Zelda title that you were talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, most likely a fake list, but if it's not, I mean, there's your Wii U seller.
Unbound King.
Unbound King would be a magnificent name.
Oh, man. It would.
Well, we could just be setting ourselves up for grave disappointment here.
I mean,
expecting
like
Unbound
hyped.
King and getting something like Pink Princess, Pink Gold Zelda,
Twilight Princess,
Pink Gold. I was going to say Pink Princess. Are you saying that a girl-based Zelda game would be a bad thing?
Oh no! What are you talking about?
Girls love Zelda.
Link is actually the girl, right? Let's not even confuse people.
Speaking of like girl and Zelda, like somebody was talking to me the other week. And they mentioned that they were looking at a poll that was taken on, like, what would people want to see in the next Zelda game. And consistently, for, like, the last few times they've done this, choosable gender was the highest rated on the poll of, like, what people want.
No.
Which is really interesting to me, because, like, people want to play, like, I guess people really want
girl
to play
Link.
As girl Link. Yeah. Linka.
And that's also, like, on one level, I'm, like, not surprised, because... Like, I don't know why. I hate to make a generalization, but in my experience, girls really love Zelda. I don't know, Kite Tails, you're a girl. Like, what do you think of Zelda?
I love Zelda.
See, I told you.
I absolutely love her. I think she's amazing. Now,
Zelda.
It would be cool to play as her, but it's not...
Yeah,
I've
see,
always
like a game
played
where you play
the
as
series
Zelda.
As Link, and it's never... I've never not been able to relate to him because he's a male and I'm not. That's not something that's ever hindered me from relating to any characters. So I guess maybe they just want to... I just feel like that's going to Mass Effect it up.
I can see... Yeah, I can see that.
Well, and I get it because he's like an avatar. But, I mean, he's not just an avatar. Like, Link... It's like a story. Like, a very concrete setup
story.
Yeah,
it is.
He's also become like a really identifiable symbol nowadays.
Yeah.
Like he's an iconic video game hero.
Maybe a different character you could choose that was a female. I would not like a female version of Link, though.
Yeah, like
they could easily do something original if they wanted to do that.
I could super easily imagine it having like playable segments or different campaigns where you play as like Zelda or Impa. Actually, in Hyrule Warriors, you can play as Impa, can't you?
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Impa's so cool.
Yeah, Impa's like kind of the one who's like made for the role, but. If you're going on like a main series Zelda game where you're going to be like fighting the big bad guy and like saving Hyrule or whatever place and like, you know, going through a bunch of dungeons, like I feel like it should be specifically Link or Linkette if there is a girl version and not like an alternate character, because it wouldn't make sense to be like, Link, you stay here. I, the side character who's nobody has heard of before, will go save the day. And like the guy with the Triforce of Courage is like, alright.
Well, the new character would completely replace Link's role in it. If you chose them instead of Link, then you would be the hero of time, but you would be a different hero of time, if that makes sense. I don't know.
I don't know. I just feel like I don't mind the idea of a female Link. At the same time, it seems like Link has never been like the poster child of like super masculine, manly man stuff.
He's
like,
very
especially in Skyward Sword, he's super girly.
He's got
he's his face in Skyward Sword.
He has like fair skin, like nice hair.
Yeah,
he's just like he's not like a super
blonde
buff
hair.
Very, very beautiful.
He's like, I don't know. I don't want to say like he's gender ambiguous. Obviously he's a guy, but like he's not really like, I'm the bodybuilder man.
No,
I'm Marcus Phoenix. Like men want to be me. Like, not
yes, one idea.
He's not a tall glass of testosterone.
Resident Evil style alternate campaigns. You have a male character and a female character. You play through a game of roughly the same length from two different perspectives and two different characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say one is Zelda and the other is Link. You think that would work in a Zelda game?
I feel like if they wrote the events and the story in a good way, because like I think that would work for a game like Wind Waker, if like the plot wasn't that Tetra, who is Princess Zelda, gets kidnapped. If it's like Tetra and Link work the entire game to save Link's sister, then like Tetra and her pirate ship goes over here to do this while Link does this.
Yeah,
and like,
I was actually kind of expecting that when I first played it. Like, it wouldn't have been that weird to play as Tetra at certain parts.
Yeah. I think that would work. And they actually did have you like control Medley in one of the dungeons.
Mm-hmm.
And
it worked fairly well.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I know that was kind of a tangent.
Maybe
but.
An Unbound King you get to play as Ganon. Who knows?
That would be.
That would be a
fitting name. I was going to say, though, going way back to the whole Mario Kart thing, what I don't get is why in Britain is Mario Kart 8 selling consoles and not, like, Super Mario 3D World or any of the, you know, more... I mean, I guess it makes sense because look at what sells on the other systems. It's always, like, the really long-running franchises, but...
Well,
yeah, big franchise with a...
Yeah.
Do they in Britain? I don't know Britain. Britain's like cloudy and rainy. It's not. It doesn't have happy enough weather.
Sitting around racing.
I mean, if I was to take a guess, like I haven't been keeping up with the Wii U's lineup very well, but has there been like I know there are plenty of party games in the Wii U, like WarioWare and such, and Nintendo Land. Has there been like a big title party game like this before? Because there's not a Mario
on the
party.
Wii U.
Yeah, like a multiplayer, like get your friends to sit down, like big sequel.
For the Wii U?
Yet.
I know of a few, but not any big ones. Oh, does Nintendo Land count?
No, I don't think that counts because it's kind of a new thing. It's like kind of an old thing, kind of a new thing.
Are you talking
they haven't
about
done a Mario
one of their
Party
original titles?
Yet.
Yeah, well, like what I'm saying is like games like Mario Party and Mario Kart have always been promoting like, you know, local multiplayer, sit on the couch and have a good time with your friends. Kind of thing.
I mean,
that
was Nintendo Land.
Well established.
That's what Nintendo Land was supposed to be. It's just
I have Nintendo
weird.
Land, and that's what we did. We'd invite people over, and people who had never ever picked up a controller in their life, we could not pry it out of their hands and tell them to go home. It's
right,
very,
but,
very user friendly for local parties, I think. So I think that's what they're kind
were,
of trying
I
to
mean,
do.
Like,
though.
I don't want to. I don't want to like discount or like say that that's. not true, because I definitely love Nintendo Land as well, and first time I played it, I loved it, but that's as a, like, open-minded Nintendo fan who's like, I'll try something new, but, like, people who are unsure about buying the console, if there's not, like, a Mario Party or a Mario Kart or something on it, like, do you think that any of them would be willing to be like, I'm Nintendo Land? That what's it like? It's not like anything. It's like itself. I don't know if I should buy that. Like,
I guess it depends on the consumer, because when I think of Nintendo, I kind of imagine it to be the Disney of video games. So it's got this very family-friendly, fun, quality, friendship vibe about it that none of the other consoles get. So parents, people who have friends over a lot and they want to entertain, I think is maybe who they would try to go for. Like I said, Wii Party U is, it's just a party game, and you can have up to, I'm not sure how many people for it. So I don't know. Maybe it's not enough incentive for people to go out and buy it, and maybe Mario Kart 8 was the big thing everyone was waiting for, because the Mario Kart games are super popular, just at parties and...
Yeah, you know, that's what I mean, is like they're well established. This is the eighth one. Obviously, it's been doing great for itself. So
there is one new numberless sequel franchise that did sell very well this week.
Oh, that's
Do you know what it is?
I don't know.
I do know what it is.
Watch Dogs. Watch Dogs sold 4 million copies in its first week. That's global stats, not UK alone, and 4 million sales at $60 each. That's like, hang on a second. Four times.
Do the math.
That's like 224 million gross revenue. So
that's like almost enough to pay off Grand Theft Auto 5's development costs.
So yeah.
Wow. That puts it into perspective.
For some reason, I want to say that this might be Ubisoft's. I had a fiasco trying to figure out how to pronounce Ubisoft. I think this is Ubisoft's highest selling new IP ever. Like, more so than Assassin's Creed and any of the Tom Clancy franchises.
Yeah, I feel like it is.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere, but yeah, Ubisoft's best-selling new IP in history. Is that good news? I guess it is. Like, it's good for the video game economy for people to buy numberless properties and take a risk, right?
Yeah, and I mean, okay, this is my thoughts on it. You mentioned Ubisoft is the people responsible for Assassin's Creed. Mm-hmm. If you look at Assassin's Creed 1, it's not a good game.
And but Watch if you look Dogs at Assassin's is at least Creed 2, better than Assassin's Creed 1.
Like, well, right. Watch Dogs is at least better. And if you look at Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed 2 is, like, objectively a much more interesting game than the first one. It deals with a more interesting character. It deals with, like better gameplay
objectively,
overall.
Objectively, huh?
Well, okay. Maybe not in the character. I'm saying, like, design-wise, objectively, it's more fun. It's not, like, a repetitive kind of...
I know what you're getting at.
Right, I know. I worded that in an odd order. But,
I thought it was going to be an Assassin's Creed game when I first saw the untitled footage of it a long time ago.
Yeah, like they were
going
to set Assassin's Creed in the present or future.
Yeah, I think everyone was kind of thinking.
What I think it is like the open world element. Like Assassin's Creed came around right when that was becoming really big, and that's kind of like, that sells really well now. Just the open world playground, like,
like two things for 1,000 hours kind of thing.
And that's, you know, like, once it started, like, growing in popularity just as Assassin's Creed was kicking off, that's why the, like, Assassin's Creed sequels were selling so well, is because people really wanted this. Like, not only because it's fun, and people like the whole playground aspect of it. I can't really think of a better word to describe it.
Sandbox?
But, yeah, the whole... I mean, and it's not exactly a sandbox, but...
Right, right. But no, I know what you mean.
Also because they feel they get their money's worth, I guess. But I it doesn't appeal to me that much.
Like,
Watch
as
Dogs
someone...
looks kind of like it.
It looks legit. It looks a lot more fun than I say it is. Like I just spent like, God, I wish Ubisoft had a timer. I swear I must have done like between 40 or 60 hours of Watch Dogs in 1 week to get a review out a week after launch, because they sent me it 2 days before launch, and I can't play through Watch Dogs in 2 days and then make a review about it in time. But anyways, whatever. It's good. It's a good game, but I don't know if it's 4 million copies in first week good. Like, it's extremely unpolished for how much money they spent on it. They marketed it to hell. They ended up selling a lot, and I feel like they ended up selling a lot not because of the quality of the product, but rather because of the marketing, and maybe also because of a desire for people to play something that is different, because at first sight, it does look different. It looks...
Yeah.
Like, you're playing a normal guy in a normal city, but after a few hours of playing, you might learn that it's really, it doesn't play like what it looks like. It ends up trying to do a cover shooter GTA clone kind of thing.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of what I was trying to say. I guess I didn't organize my thought very well, but what I meant was, like, Assassin's Creed 1 wasn't fantastic, but it sold a lot, right? And with that money, they were able to make Assassin's Creed 2, which was much, much better. It is, like, regarded as a better Assassin's Creed game. Eventually, they made it to Assassin's Creed 4. Huh?
I don't know if I feel, like, totally 100% good about that, because that means that, in a way, they kind of got away with some shit the first time.
Right. It's not a good situation for the first game, and I don't feel great that people are losing out on their money if the game isn't polished, if it's not finished. I mean, Assassin's Creed 1, there were achievements that you could not complete because the game wasn't done.
Oh, no.
It was, not nearly as bad as, like, Force Unleashed or something, but it was pretty bad. But, like, I'm saying... With all these sales on a new IP, maybe they can take that and polish up their next Watch Dogs and make, you know, a better version of the first game that they didn't make the best of. Or maybe even make a new IP that's really good, better than Watch Dogs. I don't know.
Maybe. It also kind of makes me sad that this is not just a new game, it's a new IP. They've said before that they don't want to make Watch Dogs unless they can... make it into a franchise, and I'd hate for Watch Dogs to become the next generation's Assassin's Creed. Like, what if they put the next game in some really interesting exotic city? Like, I don't know, Shanghai. Let's say you run around Shanghai. You have some weird culture shock moments. You don't know what you're looking at. It's not a familiar American city. Say they improve the gameplay so that you have much deeper hacker mechanics. Let's say... Right. Instead of pointing and clicking at a thing, you can choose from a list of commands to type into the city OS to have a much more interesting, robust system. And then let's say they just repeat that game, which is really good, three more times, like they did when they came out with Ezio in Italy, that Watch Dogs 3, 4, and 5 would be whatever cool new character in whatever cool new city ends up getting stale because they just decide to rely on it instead of innovate on it.
They didn't just say that about Watch Dogs. They said that about all the games they do. Like, that's one thing I really don't like about Ubisoft. They said they won't even start on a game if they don't think they can make a franchise out of it.
Oh, man. Like, people love to hate on EA, but right now, Ubisoft is, like... one of my least favorite publishers right now, especially with all the Uplay stuff I have to put up with on the PC. I can't believe how bad their proprietary software store is.
People need... I think what really needs to happen, and I know this is like a pipe dream that will not happen, people need to just stop trying to make their own, like, Steam.
And, oh my god, yes.
Like stop doing... Like, stop, I don't want Origin. I don't want Square. Right, did you know Enix has one?
Are you serious?
I bought Final Fantasy VII, the release on Steam when it came out, because I was like, maybe I'll play this. I had to make a SquareEnix.com account to log into that to play the game.
What does that do for them?
I don't know, but I can't play the game unless I'm connected to the internet on Steam and on Square Enix,
it's
so I can't do like an offline mode.
Send you emails, keep you in a room.
Like, it gets so much... They get so much hatred for this, and I don't see how they could be making extra money for this. It's just more bullshit for both us and them to put up with.
Yeah, I mean, like, my experience is like Windows Live Gaming for Dark Souls, Square Enix, like, whatever that's called for Final Fantasy VII, Origin for Titanfall, and now Uplay for Watch Dogs, like, just stop it. Stop it.
And I don't know how good the Square Enix one is. Like, it's bad enough that you have to have an extra icon to click on, an extra process to run, eating up your resources, and just extra time in between downloading and installing a game before actually loading it up and playing it after you make your popcorn and grab a beer.
Right.
But I don't know how bad Squeenix's software is, but Ubisoft's Uplay is... awful. Like, Uplay has crashed the game on many accounts outside of the game, where Uplay crashed and not the game, and that caused the game to crash. And
yeah,
there, but the first 2 days, there were a lot of downtime on Uplay. I couldn't play the game because Uplay was down. It suddenly turned into You Can't Play. And yeah, also, this really bugs me. Like, this really tickles my OCD. You cannot minimize Uplay and then launch your game. Mm. You have to keep Uplay open, like, in front of your screen, taking up room on your screen, or else the game will default to minimize or windowed mode because it thinks that you minimized and alt-tabbed out of the game, even though you minimized and alt-tabbed out of Uplay instead.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this topic went from Happy Sunshine to Dark Skies quickly.
happy Sunshine. Good news is that Konami approved of a Metal Gear fan remake.
Cool.
A modding team called Outer Heaven released a news update on their Metal Gear remake mod page on June 3rd, saying that Konami has given them the green light to create a fan game, the fan game being a remake of Metal Gear 1, assuming that they do not make a profit, commercialize the project, or accept donations. Uh-huh. And it's going to be using the Alien Swarm engine. Are you guys familiar with that?
Yes.
Alien Swarm. Top-down alien shoot-em-up. I don't remember.
I really like that game.
Yeah, it was free, too.
It's pretty fun. I mean, like, if you're playing
Left
with friends.
Dead, top-down co-op, right. But, I don't know, refresh me if I'm wrong, I don't think it had any stealth gameplay built in, did it?
In the Alien Swarm engine,
I don't remember any.
I mean, you can do almost anything with an engine, but were there,
Right.
Did the enemies ever have, like, an unaware state?
No, you know, now that you mention it, as far as I had played into the game, it was a lot of, like, you get to a section and, like, set enemies come out from here, here, and here. Except for I do remember there was, like, rather large enemies that you can move behind when they were walking in a certain direction, and they wouldn't notice you unless you shot at them. So maybe,
Maybe.
Not really. There wasn't really, like, a focus on that.
Like, AI might be the hugest challenge, especially for a stealth game made by fans who aren't going to be making money for it.
Right.
Because stealth games kind of have to have really complicated AI.
Yeah.
But the engine, it seems like a reasonable choice because it's top down that also does fancy 3D effects fairly well. So, yeah, are you guys familiar with fan games a lot? Like, there are a few rare good ones, but
used to make them.
Oh, really? Which ones?
I made
what
Mario
have you done?
Fan games,
like ROM hacks.
No, I made, like, legit Mario fan games. Like, I was a really old member of MFGG, Mario Fan Games Galaxy.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I've been there, like, close to since the beginning. I'm not there anymore, really. Like, I mean, once I started my channel, I stopped going. But I know so many people that have made so many. I've talked to the guy, Thunder Dragon, who made Psycho Waluigi, if you guys have played that.
I haven't, but that sounds interesting.
That sounds awesome.
Psycho Waluigi.
It's like
I
the best
play it.
Mario fan. You guys should. It's so fun.
There are so many good Mario fan
games.
I should. There's so many fun ones. Like, and mine were really bizarre. I was trying to make one with full voice acting last time because the results were hilarious, but unfortunately
so cool.
I lost all my stuff.
Super Mario Crossover is a great example of a great fan game. Mm-hmm. Super Mario Brothers X is a fan game that is literally some of the most fun local co-op I have had in my entire life.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why, but I guess because the sprites translate really well. Mario is really good fodder for fan games.
Well, and the engine, like the way it plays, is just kind of really. It's not. I don't want to say it's easy to replicate, but it's easy to replicate crappily.
I could imagine it being easy to reproduce.
It's something that doesn't have a lot of very complex mechanics where you have to like it's
but
not
effective.
I don't know if you guys,
mechanics.
Right. I don't know if you guys have ever played Dust Force, but like I've been messing around in Game Maker trying to like, how do you make wall jumps but like running up the wall and running on the ceiling? And it's just like there's a lot to like take
and
into account.
And you don't
account.
Have to worry about that when you're making a Mario game.
Right. You jump.
Some of the fan gamers would get really experimental. Like someone was trying to make a whole Super Mario Galaxy 2D and they spent like months on it, but it was just turning out so bizarre. I guess it was too hard for them to program Mario walking on the, you know, all around planetoids
right.
and stuff.
Actually, that reminds me of somebody made shortly after Super Mario Galaxy came out. Somebody made Super Meat Boy Galaxy, which is like it was like a couple levels. It was like I think it was a lot of the hell level from like or the hell world from
is
Super Meat
Boy.
Boy
that old?
Meat Boy is 2008, I believe.
Oh, wait,
are we talking Meat Boy or Super Meat Boy?
Super Meat Boy.
Oh, Super Meat Boy is that old? I didn't remember.
Yeah, it came out shortly after Braid.
Oh, wow.
Like maybe with like within a year of Braid. I don't know the release date exactly, but
that really was the beginning of the indie platformer.
Well, anyways, though, maybe I could find a video of it to show you guys during the commercial break. But Super Meat Boy Galaxy was like somebody took what was essentially the Mario Galaxy like idea of what it was, and they like recreated levels from Meat Boy, but like in this weird like planetary shape and with the same like very precise, very fast wall jumping and mechanics that were in Meat Boy. And it just like looked really like fantastic. It was like cool and interesting. And it's another like interesting fan game that like kind of was not, I don't know if it was successful, but it was like cool and good.
Have you guys ever heard of Charles Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden?
No.
I'm watching a Two Best Friends playthrough of it these days. It is absolutely hilarious. It is a surprisingly complex and deep JRPG about Charles Barkley going on a quest in a cyberpunk post-apocalyptic neo-New York to save the sport of basketball from a basketball inquisition headed by Michael Jordan. And the whole game is just like sprites and music stolen from other games pasted together in RPG Maker with really, really fun Paper Mario combat where you have to do timed button taps to land your attacks in a turn-based system.
Wow.
People have managed to do some incredibly fun and hilarious things by pasting together stolen artwork. But that's the crutch, isn't it? It's stolen artwork.
Yeah.
Like what you're supposed to do when you make a fan game, if it's a big, ambitious one, like an entire remake of a beloved franchise, is not tell anyone until it's done.
Yeah, seriously.
Seriously.
People are really bad at that on MFG.
Oh, they are so bad at
it. My new game I'm making, and then like 3 years later, whatever happened to that?
Don't be Chrono Resurrection.
Well, because, I mean, I think that just stems from the idea that they want to know if anybody even cares.
Yeah. I mean, I was like that, because I started when I was like 11 or so. Uh-huh. And I used to be like, I'm making this, and like people would actually respond all like interested, and I wasn't making anything. I didn't know how to make a game.
Right. I don't know. That's pretty. It's pretty cut and dry. That's just like I'm making Super Meat Boy 2. Is anybody interested? And if nobody replies, like I wasn't actually making that. I was kidding.
But people do it.
Just testing the waters.
Ever hear about the whole like Ocarina of Time 2D that was in production for like?
Oh, I remember that. What happened
years?
To that?
I know.
I remember reading about
that
in like 1999 or something.
I know it was really old.
Did that ever come out?
I don't think so. I mean, I would have heard
actually,
about it.
That reminds me of the. Somebody was remaking Majora's Mask with the Link to the Past engine, or like that style.
That would be amazing.
Like top-down
it
Majora's
might.
Mask.
Like, I don't know. There's no guarantee that fan games will be good, and the ones that are good are, like, the exception.
Yeah.
We've been talking about the exceptions this whole time, really, because they do exist. But fan games, the standard is much lower. They're not technically supposed to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk about them until they're out. Like, as much fun as Super Mario Bros. X is, Nintendo did issue a cease and desist and took their official website off the internet. But you know what? The game is on the internet. Doesn't matter. You can still Google it and find it really easily.
Yeah.
By the way, I have some bad news.
Oh, great.
Everything we were previously talking about no longer matters. The game has been canceled, according to ModDB. The page now says it has ceased development. There is no explanation behind why. As far as we know, the developers might have even lied about getting approval from Konami to make this fan game.
Well, that's sad.
All of our hopes and dreams of a free and wonderful fan workplace have been dashed.
I was so excited.
More bad news.
I don't really play Metal Gear, so I don't really care.
Wow. More bad news after these messages. Gosh.
Now, when you buy the Sega Genesis that comes with Sonic 1, you'll get Sonic 2 absolutely free. Sonic 2 handles stubborn stains, embarrassing bald spots, no problem. It even slices and dices, makes thousands of julienne fries. But wait, you can play it too. This free Sonic 2 is a $54.99 value. You get two Sonics for the price of one. Sonic 2 fits easily into any tackle box, made from a space-age polymer plastic for years of family fun, and pets love it too. Buy the Sega Genesis that comes with Sonic 1 and get Sonic 2 free.
Act now.
Wiener Dog sweaters sold separately.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Gerard Khalil, aka The Completionist, aka The Beardman, aka That One Video Gamer, with a special announcement for all you guys at home. This July 11th through the 13th, it's going to be the Screw Attack Gaming Convention, and myself, Greg, Alex, and the Dex crew are going to be there. We're going to have panels. It's going to be a great time. You should get your tickets now. Use the coupon code BEARDMAN with a capital B. That's B-E-A-R-D-M-A-N to get your tickets right away. Go ahead and book your hotels as well. They have combo bundles on the site, and we'll go ahead and provide links in the description below for the podcast. But guys, come see us. We're going to be there. It's going to be a blast. We're going to have so much fun meeting all you guys. Please come say hello. Please come to our panels. We'll announce times as we get closer to it. But yes, come. We're excited to see you. It's going to be awesome. See you guys there.
Welcome back to the TOVG podcast, where we were once formerly the happiest podcast on the internet. Mm. Now we're only talking about bad news. Let's start off. Former Bulletstorm developer says $60 for a game in 2014 is insane. In an interview with Games Industry International, Adrian Chimilars?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Chimilars? Yeah, I'm really sorry, Adrian. I'm really sorry, Adrian. I cannot do your last name, but
yeah.
This developer named Adrian, who helped make Bulletstorm, said in an interview with Game Industry International that in 2014, $60 for a game is a little insane.
Yeah.
Fully explaining his argument might take too long to quote it directly, but in sum, he was talking about the cost of developing features that he sees as unnecessary added expenses, like having multiplayer modes in addition to single player modes, or, right. Increasing game length that for games that might not necessarily need to be really long, like... Uh-huh. If you have a 40-hour sandbox game full of padding like Watch Dogs, that's probably what he's talking about. Other such unnecessarily expensive features might include tablet apps, social community features, and exclusive content and special editions for everything under the sun, a lot like Watch Dogs did it. He cites Dead Space as an example of a AAA game that would have worked great as a smaller, cheaper franchise, mm-hmm. but got killed because of EA wanting to turn just one of its games into this massive, expensive product platform. I don't know what you guys think, but saying $60 for a game is insane is kind of a bold statement because it could be misinterpreted a number of ways. I think his argument is kind of solid and not that offensive.
I have to agree with you and agree with him.
Yeah, same here, actually.
I think what he's saying to back up his argument makes a lot of sense. Around the time that Dead Space 3 came out, which is the Dead Space that he's citing as the one that with unnecessary features and such, I was a big naysayer of the game because I didn't like that they were adding all this stuff that like doesn't seem like any Dead Space player really wanted. I mean, like if it,
co-op,
right? Like Dead Space is a big horror game. I mean, that's at least what the first one was marketed as, was a horror game. And you know, it may not have been the scariest game. It may have been filled with a lot of jump scares, but I think it was a very enjoyable game to play. I really like it.
That was back when EA was good. Yeah,
right. It's no Amnesia. Like, it's not gonna like have you cowering in bed for a long time, but like it's pretty good. And you know, the logical step forward from that would be making it better. And a lot of people who liked it were horror game fans, and they wanted it to be scarier. And, you know, how do you make a game scarier? By allowing you to play it with a friend, right?
That's
how it works.
No. Oh. No, it's not. You're wrong.
Well, I mean, like, I know that's kind of like a harsh thing to say, but like, I don't think any Dead Space fan was like, man, you know what I really want to do right now? I want to play this with a friend and make it not scary and make it a shooter game instead of... Like yeah. instead of like more horror based, and they kind of did that, and it kind of ruined the idea for me. Like, I don't really want another Dead Space game now.
I might have spoken too harshly about it, because nowadays you are actually seeing multiplayer horror games that manage to be scary, and I guess the prime candidate would be DayZ, but it's not the same. Like, they didn't build it on a survival horror genre control scheme with like clunky tank controls like you have in Dead Space. Like it's built on Arma, and the reason it is scary is not because of things jumping out at you, but because you're constantly running out of supplies. The reason it's scary to play with other people is that other people are horrible human beings who don't help you, co-op game, but rather hinder you and take advantage of you in entirely unpredictable ways because they're humans, which is something that I see a lot of multiplayer co-op horror games like Resident Evil and Dead Space 3 completely miss the point of.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And like, there are probably ways you could have a counter-operative mode in a horror game with entirely unpredictable monsters coming at you because they're controlled by humans rather than you having a human buddy helping you out, which thus would make the situation less tense.
You mean Left 4 Dead 2?
Yeah, I guess, but Left 4
Dead. I'm probably
the
only one who likes co-op horror games because I'm too afraid to play them on my own.
I feel like co-op completely ruins horror, but like, it doesn't ruin the shock value. I mean, DayZ is just shocking as hell. Like, I don't really. It doesn't necessarily scare me. It just like gives me a heart attack. At least the first time I played. I've only played it like once. So,
well, I think,
but
yeah, go ahead.
No, yeah, I just. Co-op, it just doesn't really work, because one of the reasons I like horror games so much is the lonely atmosphere, like being afraid to move forward. You don't get that when you're playing with someone else, you know?
Yeah, because then your life is a bit more expendable, because you have someone else to pick up after
you. Well, I don't know. I think also it depends if co-op is a big selling feature, you know? How many more people will buy the game because it's co-op and because they can play? With their friend or their
but
sibling.
Horror's obviously not a genre you can really market like to a massive.
I guess like, maybe not horror, but
you used to be
has
able
anyone
to.
Here ever played Amarines on N64?
I have not.
Mm-mm. Well, it
that's
was
a new one on me.
I don't know if I call it horror, but it was an old co-op game where you fought these really, really creepy, scary bugs, and you're in.
Oh my gosh!
Like, the Arctic.
I know what game you're talking about.
Yes, and that was co-op. So. My dad specifically bought it just so my brother and I would have a co-op game to play together. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't have. But I think that was the first scary co-op game I played. But,
wait,
like,
wait, what was
for
this
example,
called?
It's called Armorines.
Armorines? Honestly, this you got me all really curious.
It's so much fun. It was scary, though, because when he died, I just had to go on by myself.
Well, okay, I'm not going to knock the idea of co-op in general, because co-op is a great idea. Like, co-op sells games, definitely. But I think what the whole, like, guy, the Adrian, the Bulletstorm devs, like, deal here is, like, Dead Space was kind of, like, they tacked on the co-op because, like, because of that idea. Like, co-op sells. People will buy this if it's co-op. Like, but the people who really wanted another Dead Space game wanted, like, closure to the story, like, you know, how the other Dead Space games have gone. I mean, like, at least that's what I wanted. I can speak for myself, I suppose, not for everyone else. But, like, a real, like, hardcore Dead Space fan wasn't going, like, I want to play this with my buddy. Like, maybe, I guess it got some new people into it. But, like, I don't know. I do agree with the guy's statement that $60 is kind of ludicrous for a
thing. It really depends on the game, though, because, let's say, should Mass Effect 3 be $60? No, but what about Skyrim?
No.
It kind of depends
I'd still say no.
Skyrim
the chunk
is
of the
designed
game.
For its length. And I think what he's also talking about is that a lot of AAA games are not designed for their length. And I don't know. In a way, I kind of feel like he said $60 for a game in 2014 is insane, partially because it's a shocking thing to say, because people will be like, what? No, $60 is a lot of money for a little video game. But... Uh-huh. What he's saying is that developing a $60 game, a $60 AAA game in 2014 is insane. Back in 2009, you could make really short, focused AAA games like Bulletstorm or Mirror's Edge. Uh-huh. And I guess what he's saying is that nowadays you can't get away with it. And the reason why I like using Watch Dogs as an example is because it's a stealth game that is unnecessarily a sandbox game. Like, it has really great, fun stealth segments that work really well when the levels are designed to take advantage of it, and also the hacking features.
Well, that's why when you're driving Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, like, a lot of games that I see coming out nowadays, like Watch Dogs, and I guess Metal Gear Solid 5 might fall victim to this as well, because it's also a sandbox game. Mm-hmm. And like Destiny, maybe, they might just be too big for the core mechanics that they're trying to convey.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it kind of also depends on what direction they're trying to take video games. If they're getting further away from gameplay and focusing more on the experience and the environment, it would depend on the game. I'm kind of the person who looks at a game and says, okay, I really want this for the gameplay, not so much everything else padding that. So
padding isn't good.
Are, like, forgetting that, like, replay value is so much more important than length. And I don't know if this is even really relevant.
Oh,
but
and that's what Platinum does so well.
Yeah. I don't know if this is even, like, relevant, but when I was a kid, $50 seemed really over the top for, like, a lot of the games I'd been buying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but 60, like, when I saw that they were starting to price them at 60, I was just like, holy crap, this is getting out of control.
I never buy games full price. That's just ridiculous.
No. Mm-hmm. Unless I'm really excited about them coming out.
Yeah, unless it's... Well, I didn't buy Mario Kart 8, but I am playing it. I'll just say that.
I won't
What Kytale's saying is that she stole it.
Hey, okay, that could be taken the wrong way. I did not pirate it. Let me just say that. For anyone listening...
I'm kidding, of course. I don't know. Like, I'm with you, Jordan, in the same way where, like, I remember when games were, like, 40, and I was like, wow, that's a lot, and, you know, like, need to, like, pick and choose which game I want. What's my next game gonna be? Because then I'm gonna have that one for, like, a few months before and then, like, you know, bumped up to 50, and I was like, I really need to choose what my next game's gonna be. Yep. And then I, like, started working, and it kind of seemed like I started, like, working and having a job. Didn't seem as much, but now that I'm paying bills and rent and stuff and living,
and you think about it too, $60, that's only 40 shy of 100. That's a lot of money.
That's a very big amount of money
for something that you may not even. Okay, this has been done before.
Yeah.
Like, judging by length is a silly thing to do, but like you said, Jordan, like, replay value is really important, and what I think a lot of AAA developers nowadays are kind of misunderstanding is that replay value isn't the same as longevity, nor the same as padding. Like, I would much rather have a super highly polished 6-hour game that you can replay extremely differently eight times.
And I don't know if it's just
to disagree with that. I would not be able to, like, what was that game that was really short that came out? Dishonored? Everyone was complaining it was really, really short, but it was really expensive. Uh-huh. And that's one of the criticisms that I repeatedly heard was you just weren't getting your money's worth. You have to think about it, like, in terms of what we pay for entertainment, how much is a regular movie ticket? Like
$12.
$12, $15, and that's what, for 3 hours?
Yeah.
So I think people have kind of
learned, it's a double standard.
Yeah, well, that's how they think about it, is what is this worth as far as the amount of time it's going to entertain me? I think that's how the average person thinks about it.
I've definitely criticized length before. Like, when people, like, and even Jimmy's done this in one of his videos, and I like that video a lot. People will, like, talk about how people need to stop criticizing length. But at the same time, people are, like, buying little worlds to, like, sink their brains into, so sometimes length is pretty, I don't know, it just depends on the type of game.
My big deal with length is that, like, if the game is designed like George was saying earlier, it's like Skyrim is designed around its length, right? Like, you like, it feels good to waste an hour walking across a landscape because, like, the landscape's beautiful, it's big and massive, you can, like, see a mountain way in the distance, and you walk and the mountain gets bigger and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in this, like, crazy big world, and it's just, like, it feels cool, right? So it was, like, built to feel cool for the amount of time that you're playing it. Whereas if Skyrim, if all the towns were like smashed together and there was like a big line of dungeons just sitting outside, obviously it would be
super lame because like, the combat isn't like polished enough to make for an exciting 6-hour experience, and the dialogue isn't compelling enough to make for a tightly focused 6-hour story.
Exactly. Like Skyrim's length being a lot of walking around and stuff is because it was designed for that to be one of the more like enjoyable parts of the game, like seeing trees and seeing like giants and their mammoths walking around. Like it's kind of like fun and cool.
That's why I say like depends on the type of games,
right? Like, even Braid, like my favorite game in the world, Braid. If you were to make Braid a 40-hour game with long walks in between every level,
yeah. But then again, you would never pay $60 for Braid, would you?
Not 60. No, you got me there.
Like maybe 25. I don't know.
Like Braid would be one of the games that that would push me to like the 30s, even as short as it is, because I can play that game forever. I can play that game again and again every day, and it would be just as good as the first time. But
I don't know.
60 is still a bit much.
I fall into the type of person where I can enjoy replaying a game, not immediately after I do it. Maybe I've played Chrono Trigger who knows how many times, but it hasn't been.
Right.
It's been over the years. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And I did at one time play $60 for that cartridge just because of, I mean, the rarity
really long,
of it, but
yeah,
I'd say Chrono Trigger is a $60 game. I'll say that.
I could imagine paying
game.
$60 for Chrono Trigger, but
yes!
It's also like nowadays that I'm reviewing games, which means I have to play through a lot in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
I really appreciate shorter games now. Like my favorite game I played last year, I think, was Metal Gear Rising, which has a story that might take you like 6 or 7 hours, with maybe 4 hours if you don't die.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can play it again and again entirely differently with all of these different modes that unlock all of these different crazy kind of things with all different play styles that I don't know, like that makes it worth $60 for me when there's both replay value and a tight polished experience that still feels good the first time.
Yeah.
Or feels good again and again, because there are also, like, I wouldn't play through a BioShock game more than once because there just isn't enough variation in playstyle there.
Right. I definitely see what you're saying, yeah.
You know, Metal Gear Solid 3 is a nice long 18-hour action game that you can play through again and again and have an entirely different experience every time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making a Metal Gear Solid movie. That's
Damn
a
it.
Segue, right?
That's close enough.
Sony Picture Studios is in early talks with a director named Jordan Vogt Roberts to come aboard and direct their adaptation of Metal Gear Solid.
Mm.
Any other Metal Gear Solid fans in here besides me?
No, sorry.
Not yet, but I'm planning on being one.
I want to play them. I want to understand. But not at this point have I.
Okay,
yeah,
I want to like play
box
through
set
the series
downstairs that I haven't started yet. But
I wish I could be you guys, because you're in for a hell of an adventure. Like if you start in release order, like start Metal Gear Solid 1, 2, 3,
yeah,
maybe 4. I don't know.
Well, I did play the first one, and I thought it was just unbearably goofy.
Oh, then you will at least know what I'm talking about here. Okay. I hate being reminded that the Metal Gear Solid movie exists, because that being unbearably goofy is a very video gamey thing to do. I think it would be really easy to mess up a Metal Gear Solid movie by making a really dumb, goofy action movie that doesn't have the kind of smart edginess that Metal Gear Solid tries to have, which makes it kind of adorable.
As long as they do not make Scarlett Johansson Meryl.
Why not?
Because she can't act.
Shots fired.
Well, also, yeah, like Metal Gear Solid isn't known for its acting. Like David Hayter, who voiced Solid Snake, like he did a goofy as hell, super stereotypical, rough, gravelly action hero voice, but you still love him anyway because that's kind of how the characters are billed as cheesy video game heroes.
I mean, if they're
heroes.
Going for some like machete version of Metal
God.
Gear, then.
It's not grindhousey, but it is kind of comic booky.
Well, to put into perspective, though, George, the acting may not have always been like super praised in Metal Gear Solid, but Metal Gear Solid is a video game where the acting can take shotgun seat to gameplay,
exactly.
Which was great, sorts of other as far as I know, right?
Yeah.
And, but, you know, it the is acting known. Is what carries a movie. Yeah. There is no other element to the movie aside from the acting, the visuals, and the audio. And so...
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone would say, like, Angelina Jolie was a bad actor, but that Tomb Raider movie was hilarious.
Movies don't totally hinge on acting. Like, I don't know. Alfred Hitchcock didn't use super serious method actors. Everyone acts really cardboard in a lot of fun movies that are great.
Yeah.
And I guess... What I'm afraid of, it's directed by Avi Arad, who does popcorny brand adaptions. He produced Amazing Spider-Man 2, The Incredible Hulk, X-Men The Last Stand, like the Sony Marvel movies rather than the actual Marvel movies, which are known for getting much, much higher scores.
Right.
So it's not necessarily, like, okay, I haven't seen his big movie, which was Kings of Summer. Has anyone seen Kings of Summer in here?
I have not.
No.
It got decent-ish reviews, and the guy's like a young director who was around, I think, 13 or 14 around Metal Gear Solid, around the time it came out. So he might be able to appreciate the really weird, campy storytelling that video games can get away with more than an older director would. Is that a horrible thing
know.
To say?
I don't think it's going to work.
It's just so easy to mess up a video game movie. Like,
it is.
Like, Silent Hill might be the best one, and that was okay. Like, it wasn't super good.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I've actually considered that the best video game movie in the past.
But there's no way for the Super Mario kind of like Brothers silly. Movie?
Oh, whoa. Actually, no, you might be right. People hate it, but if you go watch the Super Mario Brothers movie, it is a lot of fun.
I like that movie for how dumb it is.
Like, especially with, Dennis Hopper as Bowser.
Yeah.
Well, just, you know, I mean,
he
what
was
worked,
hated
though,
for that performance.
It was completely different. They reimagined the world and made it something new. They made it so that it could work for a movie.
Yeah, I mean, like... could like kind of work for me.
Could, I mean, as far as you know, it goes the way they kind of envisioned what the Goombas would look like and things that. But what do you want to do for a movie that already uses?
Well, I also
realistic
think dating,
elements and realistic storyline.
Well, I think that'll make it
kind
easier
of
than a movie like Super Mario Brothers. Cause,
like,
I know they can't be as creative though.
I think I saw the Super Mario Brothers movie when I was 20 in like 2010, so it was really easy to laugh. The cheesy early 90s-ness of it all.
Yeah.
And that kind of makes it a bit easier to digest. Like, I remember people really hated how it wasn't true to the game at all.
Right.
But when you come into it with expectations that are entirely different than what people back then would have had, then you see it in a different light that makes some of that stuff okay.
If it was true to the game back then, that would have been
very weird. It would have been maybe even worse.
Yes.
All I remember is all the girls in my class thought Luigi was hot.
Weird.
John Leguizamo, right?
I don't even know the actor.
He
didn't
even
know
that
what
he went on
like.
To be a gangster in The Sopranos.
Really?
Yeah, which is hilarious.
Year of Luigi.
Okay, so yeah, Metal Gear Solid movie. I'm really scared because I love Metal Gear Solid, and I'm really scared of them turning it into a dumb popcorn action figure adaptation that, like, you can make a dumb Metal Gear Solid movie. The Metal Gear Solid movies kind of come off as dumb, but... it would be so easy to make them an action movie instead of a character drama. Like, make it a dumb character drama, but with smart characters. Like, that's what Metal Gear Solid kind of is.
Uh-huh.
I think you should be scared.
I'm scared.
I also think you should be scared.
Your fear is validated.
Oh, God.
At the very
I mean,
right.
really,
it'll,
Spider-Man
2?
I didn't even see the movie, but
Amazing
I heard
Amazing Spider-Man
how terrible
2, not
was.
Regular Spider-Man
Amazing
2.
Amazing Spider-Man
regular
2.
Spider-Man 2 was pretty all right.
Oh,
we're okay
really?
In my book.
Tobey Maguire?
I like Tobey Maguire.
No, I don't
that
like Tobey
movie,
Maguire
Tobey
at the time.
Maguire. Why didn't they
Tobey
do Tobey Maguire's Grace?
Crying face makes me want to punch Tobey Maguire in the face.
Oh, that
oh my God.
Face and the hair and the pelvic thrust.
That was Spider-Man 3,
oh
though, to be fair. Spider-Man 2 wasn't nearly as bad
and
as
And you know
3.
What? I have not seen Spider-Man 3, and I feel like I might have better memories of Spider-Man 2 because of that.
I would suggest watching it just for the hilariousness.
Don't watch it. Don't hurt yourself.
Like when I watched the Mario
you
Brothers
laugh
movie.
At
you won't laugh. You'll cry.
Okay.
You'll make the Tobey Maguire crying face.
Okay.
I laughed
I don't
watching
wanna...
it.
I don't want us to run out of time here. And we have last topic. One last topic.
Yes.
And this is the last topic, but not the least topic. It is something very interesting that one of our forum members has given us. And it is Matt, CD42, says that he found last week's discussion that we had about Adam Sessler to be extremely fascinating. Mm-hmm. Jordan and Kite weren't on for last week, so this might be news to you guys, but it was about Adam Sessler releasing a little short memoir article he wrote for Kotaku, about 2,000 words, talking about his history with video gaming. But it, of course, was there to clarify why he left Rev3 and what the experience of being fired from G4 as this super popular, super important video game media personality was like. And what me and Satchel ended up having a little argument about was the responsibility of a reviewer. Like, where is it mm-hmm. okay to grow as a reviewer? He went from having to filter his reviews a lot at G4 to doing it more unfiltered on Rev3, which kind of allowed for a much different vocabulary, which is like totally okay and whatnot, but
right.
It's fortunate that this guy brings it up on the forum this week, because Adam Sessler is actually going to very briefly return for broadcasting to cover E3. Mm-hmm. He's going to be alongside Kevin Pereira as Spike TV's E3 All Access panelists.
Right.
And Adam Sessler and Kevin Pereira are from G4. They mm-hmm. have not been on Spike before, and I don't know if I'm really... Like, I'm super duper happy to see Adam Sessler come back. Like, I'm a big fan. I've always enjoyed his work, and it's been really interesting to see how he's grown and changed over the years. But at the same time, like, Spike TV has a much lower
standard
credibility than Sessler's work usually does, which makes me kind of... I feel both sad and happy about it in a way. I'm happy, like, yay, more Sessler. I'm sad as in, like, wow, he has to, in order to have more Sessler, he has to be doing work for Spike TV now.
I don't know.
You know what I find really tragic about Adam Sessler? And I hate to say this, but, like, when I was a kid, like, way before YouTube existed, Adam Sessler and Morgan Webb were, like, the first, like, funny, comedic game reviewers. Like, mm-hmm. they totally inspired me, and once he left G4, he kind of had to go for a more, like, serious Total Biscuit kind of tone with his work. Like, he kind of abandoned the comedy aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. I did not mind that. I thought...
I don't mind it that much.
Their comedy was some of the worst parts of their show.
Well, maybe it's because I was, like, a six-year-old, but...
Oh, dear.
Just really nostalgic about it.
Aww.
Don't get me wrong. I like Sessler, and the only reason I critique is because I love Sessler. Like, right. I've met him. We had a great time. He's a super cool dude. I'm a huge fan. But it's on G4, like, they had to fill time with these really kind of cringy comedy sketches, and on Rev3, it ended up, without that filter, he ended up getting really overindulgent sometimes, which was easy to see happening. And now he's on Spike. And what's interesting about Spike's E3 coverage, well, I say he's on Spike, but he's probably only going to be there for next week, is that they are not broadcasting the Sony or Ubisoft conferences. There's also Microsoft and EA conferences. Nintendo nowadays does pre-recorded conferences that they just broadcast to everyone. Uh-huh. But, like, this is what I'm talking about. Spike TV has much lower standards for video game coverage. At their E3 video game coverage, they are not going to be showing almost half of the content that they could show, and I know that's going to piss him off to a degree. Like, you can see footage of him arguing with G4 producers about cutting to a commercial break in the middle of the Halo E3 trailer in 2006. He really knows what he's doing, and it's kind of sad to see him working with a much less respectable employer, if he is getting employed. He might just be doing this because he wants to.
I don't know. I feel like he's at a position where he doesn't have to do something mm-hmm. that he wouldn't want to. Like, he wouldn't have to, like, man, I need to really get these bills paid, so let me go to Spike.
He's not going to have trouble finding more work. He's right. Adam Sessler.
Right. I'm saying, like, he's probably doing this for a reason. So, I mean, I don't know. I say if you respect the guy and you trust him, I think it'll probably end up going all right. Then again, I don't respect nor trust Spike TV at all. So, because they're the wonderful people who brought us the VGX.
The awards. VGX, VGAs, I don't even know what to call them anymore. They've become an ambiguous slime ball of confusion and shame.
The wonderful awards where the host not only does not care about games in any way, shape, or form, but insults all of the viewers in one blanket statement.
Fun in his opening production. Speech.
So good.
And
so
good. I want to like Geoff Keighley, but I don't think I can after the Doritogate scandal. Like, the guy does really cool work, and he's also Kojima's go-to guy for American journalism, which means I kind of have to ingest his work to a certain extent. And he's done some really cool things over the course of his career, but it's because he's employed by Spike. Well, he's employed by Game Trailers, which might as well mean he's Spike. Spike is like the 1800s boss of the city that no one wants to acknowledge is actually running things behind the scenes, but is totally doing it and is being extremely unfair and out of touch about it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes.
Good analogy.
Oh, God.
I like that a lot, actually.
That makes me really scared, actually.
You're getting scared a lot tonight. Right.
Yeah. And we started off so happy.
I know. This is what happiness leads to.
Happiness anyway, though,
is the path to scary.
I'd like to thank MattCD42 from the forums for making a thread about that and posting some
Magic
Inc. thoughts.
Magic Incorporated. We want to see some rad threads. We want to talk about what you guys want to talk about. And if you start a new episode thread after listening to this podcast and ask some questions amongst yourself, get some discussion flowing, we will talk about it in the next episode.
Whatever the topic is.
Mention you by name, we'll read off your thoughts.
I don't know. If you just talk about butts or something, we might.
Well, like, of course, there's going to be
a little bit of a guideline.
Of course, we're going to have some discretion. We're not just going to, like,
want to talk about butts?
What? I mean, if that's what the people want us to talk about. But anyway, we're of course going to have some discretion. But if you post something on the forums and if you post a thread right after you listen to this and, you know, promote some discussion, have some interesting thoughts, we'll read it and we'll call you out by name and we'll thank you for inputting your wonderful thoughts.
TOVG, thatonevideogamer.com. Head to the forums, then head to the TOVG podcast subforum and go nuts. Talk about butts.
Just go nuts.
Someone's going to definitely do that now.
Great. Wonderful.
Probably.
Great.
Well, anyways, every week on Friday, we're going to try to have another one of these new podcasts out underneath the features section. And we are also on iTunes. If you're listening on there, be sure to rate us 5 stars and we'll return the favor by being awesome, keeping up quality.
By continuing to do podcasts.
Yeah.
And again, don't if you're super hardcore following our instructions, don't just relegate yourself to the podcast subforum. We also have forums of our own related to our YouTube channels on the site that you can discuss weird things with us as well on. Is there any new projects that you guys want to plug or talk about before we head out for the day?
Well, I would just like to say, first of all, if you have not seen my new video, I made a level head.
Oh, yeah.
I analyzed level design of the new game 1001 Spikes that I love so much.
And you did such a good job.
Thank you.
Like,
thank
seriously, you. Really getting into the subliminal psychology of block placement. It was so fun.
The game really inspired me, and I really liked making that episode. And a lot of people have really liked it. Like, gotten
John Blow liked it.
It looks
right.
So fun.
That was kind of a very made me giddy,
very humbly moment. I would
very
have liked
humbly moment is a good way to put that.
To see your inbox after that happened. Oh man.
Yeah. But yeah. So I made that, and I'm really pretty pleased with how that came out. And if you're interested in learning about 1001 Spikes and you want to see how well the designers designed it, go check that out. Also, I was on Kytale's new quiz show on TOVG.
Yes.
You should check that out, too. Tell us about that.
Oh, I can't believe I haven't watched that yet.
Yes. Well, listen to it, rather. It's a video game quiz show called To Be Determined, in which we have some panelists, and we give them some video game news trivia and just cool mini games and see who is the winner. And last week, Jimmy was the winner.
I was the winner. And it was a lot of fun. And I sounded very hungover. I might have been very hungover at the time.
I just thought
that
it was
just
the time
gives
of
you
day.
A good reason. All right.
What
and
about,
also,
anybody else?
Nope.
Oh, I guess I was going to say if I haven't uploaded in like a month, and anyone who's waiting on my next video, it's requiring me to beat like 8 different games, so it'll be ready soon. It's just taking a while.
Jordan puts in the hard work to give you the quality.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And one thing I want to encourage listeners to do, be sure to check us out next week. We're going to be doing an E3 show, and it'll be on Thursday at the tail end of E3. We're actually going to be talking from LA. Is it Alex or Gerard who's going to E3?
It's actually all of us.
All of us. Okay, cool. So, yeah, it'll be super legit. Like, we're going to have actual...
Wow.
quote-unquote E3 correspondents reporting from LA on next week's podcast. No, it's going to be super fun. I'm really looking forward to that because we can get journalistic.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be fun.
So have you been to an E3 before?
I went last year for one day, and I wasn't sure what to expect. Everybody else that I went with had like things that they needed to do to like justify having a media pass. So I was just kind of like wandering around. I played, I watched my friend Michael Barity play A Link Between Worlds for a little bit, and that was really cool. And then I think that's actually all I did. I walked by the Nicholas booth that they had there in the PS4 and like the PlayStation area, but I didn't get to meet any of the guys because I was too alone and scared.
No. Yeah. That's how I felt at GDC the first time I went. Like, it's such a different experience going when you're starting out, when you're new and all alone.
Yeah.
Versus again when you have stuff to do and have contacts to make.
Right.
And
right.
I'm sure I'm gonna do E3 someday, but I'm dreading it. Like, you don't often hear a lot of positive impressions about how much hard work it is. Like last year when Adam Sessler did it, you can see him slowly go crazy over trying to cover that. We get to do it too next week. Oh, be sure to listen.
I remember what I did last E3.
What'd you do?
Stood in line for an hour for Beyond 2 Souls demo and hated
it.
Oh
my god.
Fun. I didn't know what it was, and everyone was like, come on, stand Beyond 2 Souls. And I was like, yeah, sure. And then I played it, and the guy
just like, okay.
One of the booth guys walked up and he's like, simulator.
One of the booth guys walked up and he's like, yeah, so what'd you think of the game? And I was like, it was fun. And then, like, I walked away, and I was just like, oh, God, that was terrible.
At least you were nice to him.
Yeah, well, that's stupid. I shouldn't be nice to the booth guy. He's supposed to be getting feedback.
It's funny, I
contributed to that.
That game exists. Like, I seriously want to rename it, like, Ellen Page Pouting Simulator. It's what you do, right?
It's, like, it's less open than an actual point-and-click adventure.
Wow.
Wow. All right. Well, anyway. we're totally at our limits here,
right,
got to say bye. But we have some cool things going on, and we really hope you guys listen next week. It's going to be a big show.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.